What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back with a special Super Bowl edition, and my partner in crime, Eric Edholm, is on the scene in Minnesota for Super Bowl 52. And Eric, before we get to the important stuff like Sunday's game, let's get to the really important stuff, like how was the Paisley Park tour, and have you made it to Surly Brewing?
I haven't made it to Surly yet. In fact, I don't know what happened, but other guests in my hotel apparently got a care package involving a four-pack of Surly. I did not. So when I checked in, they said something about, oh, you're with the IBM guys, huh? And I said, sure, right. You know, playing along, wanted to... I didn't know it would screw me out of four beers. So apparently my being with the IBM guys... It left me four beers short of what I wanted.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, if you would have went to Surly Brewing, chances are you kind of don't know what's going on by the time you leave there anyway. So,
right.
Probably okay. But what about the Prince Tour, man? You're one of the biggest fans I know, and just following you on Twitter, it seems like that was everything you hoped it would be.
Yeah, and they don't let you take photos, but it makes you focus in on every little piece of detail in there. And, you know, it's really tastefully done for something that's only been going since, like, October. I mean, they really have done a nice job of putting it together, and all the little pieces of Arcana from the late 70s up until his death a little less than 2 years ago. And I'll tell you what, even if you're just a mild Prince fan, but you're a huge music fan, you would appreciate it. Just... all the artists he's worked with, there's little flecks of them in there as well. So it's a really cool tribute, I think.
Awesome. He is Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish. This is the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe while you're there. That's definitely appreciated. You can leave us a rating and review, too. Eric, there's a game to discuss, but gosh, I'm kind of having more fun with the scene setting stuff. Have you seen Justin Timberlake or Pink? Did you get to the Timberlake press conference today? And are we excited at all about Sunday's music festivities?
Yeah, and I'm actually, I like Timberlake. I do. I like him.
Too.
But his press conference is downtown, and all the media, well, the majority of the media stuff has been out by Mall of America. So that's like, you know, almost a 30-minute drive in traffic. So it really is tough to get down there and still get everything you want to do here. So miss JT, but apparently they were setting up for him out at Paisley Park. He's going to have like a listening party and probably perform out there on Saturday. So yeah, it's a, you know, there's evidence of JT being there, but not actually in front of me.
How cool. One of the prop bets at Super Bowl prop bets is whether he's going to cover Prince during the halftime show. I feel like that's a slam dunk, don't you?
Oh yeah. Odds should be like 1-30 on that one. Like you shouldn't even get any money back for that. Yeah.
I think I wrote that him not covering Prince would be a bigger upset
right.
than Nick Foles out
exactly.
playing Tom Brady. So, all right. So set the scene for us a little bit. Other than cold and being at the Mall of America, did you get all your shopping done, Eric?
Yeah, no, the kids are getting, my suitcase is about 9 pounds heavier. But yeah, I mean, as far as the teams are concerned, you know, it's been a very laid back week. You know, there's really been no tension, no sparks flying. You know, I expected Lane Johnson to maybe pop off a little bit. You know, he made his Tom Brady comment last week. It really had nothing, you know, no carryover effect. I mean, even Bill Belichick was kind of sort of cracking jokes. And, you know, Doug Peterson's, you know, he's like every guy's dad in when you were playing Little League, you know, that's who he reminds me of, you know. And yeah, it's just been, both teams seem very relaxed, very focused on the task at hand. There haven't been any fly off the handle type guys this week. And yeah, that's just been about it.
Was it like that last year at all? Because there was a big gap in experience last. I mean, of course, anyone who plays the Patriots in the Super Bowl, you can say that. But especially with that young Falcons club, maybe some similarities. Is it a different vibe this year, even a little more toned down?
That's a good question. I felt like the Falcons were super confident. I mean, and not in a cocky way, not in an overconfident way. I kind of was impressed with how they were, how... I know they went into that week thinking they were the better team than the Patriots. And I don't think that had any effect on, you know, them losing or blowing the lead.
Right.
You know, the first half, they were the better team. So, I don't know. It's easy to put a lot of stock into what these guys say and how they act here. It sometimes isn't tantamount to any kind of football activity in any way, really.
Sure, sure. All right, well, we will get to the game a little bit. Obviously, our breakdown, and the listeners should check out ProFootballWeekly.com, too. We'll have a really good preview up there as well, and all kinds of fun Super Bowl stories for them to pass the time until Sunday. But before we do that, Eric, I do want to get your take on the huge trade that, frankly, I think kind of stole the Super Bowl spotlight, at least for 24 hours. Of course, I'm talking about Alex Smith going to Washington. Not yet official, but the Chiefs have agreed to send Alex Smith to Washington in exchange for a third-round pick and cornerback Kendall Fuller. There's a ton of reverberations that are going to be felt all across the league in this one, but what was kind of your immediate reaction and where are you at maybe about 36 hours later on this thing?
Yeah, it was funny at the time because it had, you know, broke around 8 p.m. Central Time, and probably about 60% of the media members were at this party at Mall of America. We're, you know, riding, you know, eating little finger foods and riding on roller coasters at the time. So then in about a 5-minute span, you can look in any direction. Everybody's got their phones kind of furiously flipping through to read the news. And so, yeah, it was surprising. I mean, I thought maybe the Browns or somebody else would kind of come in with a big play, maybe the Broncos. And, you know, it sounds like both of those teams sort of made their effort. But to me, the key is really for what the Chiefs get back is Kendall Fuller. He was their best defensive back at the end of the year, and I think he's going to be really good. So that was a good pickup for them. And, you know, it just like you said, it can go in a million different directions. Obviously, you can take it in the Kirk Cousins direction, which is where does he go now? And how do the Redskins handle his exit? Do they just let him go, or are they going to kind of delay it and, you know, and place a transition tag on him or something like that? So, obviously, we know he's not staying in Washington, and we kind of just have to sit there and figure out where he might end up.
You know, I feel like the immediate reaction, Eric, was that the Chiefs kind of took Washington to the woodshed a little bit. Maybe it was the Kendall Fuller sweetener in the deal. I'm not so sure. I mean, and I don't want to let them off the hook for how awful they handled the Kirk Cousins situation for 2 years now. But I feel like Alex Smith is a pretty good consolation prize in this, and they are going to get that third-round pick back next spring, obviously, in the form of, I would imagine, what will be a top compensatory pick, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I guess I'm curious to see what – yeah, the Redskins have sold this as them saving money. Well, we're saving money, right? Because if we franchise Cousins, you know, we would have had to pay him $34, $35 million, and Alex is only on for, what, you know, $17 or $18 million, you know, for that first year or whatever it was. So that's certainly one way to spin it, and I think he's a good quarterback. And you know – he'll get to throw the. He'll probably have his career high in attempts because Jay Gruden wants to throw the ball. So that may lead to career numbers next year. The interceptions may go a little down from what Cousins had. The yards per carry or yards per attempt certainly will go down, but they got slightly worse at quarterback, I think, and told themselves they were saving money in doing so. But they had to give up a third round pick and a good DB. So I don't know that I totally love this thing. They got older. And I don't necessarily think better at quarterback.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. I feel like the difference between the two quarterbacks may turn out to be negligible, but there's no question that they did get older in the process and that they didn't save money, because if they had not, you know, brought one low ball offer to the table after another for Kirk Cousins a couple years ago, they could have gotten the long-term deal done, and they already would have been out from the guaranteed portion of it that they've ended up spending on the franchise tag over the past couple of years. So it was not the best asset allocation. There's no question about that. But I don't know. I'm fascinated to see the next act for both of these quarterbacks, the perennially underappreciated Alex Smith, obviously. And then I guess maybe you could argue Kirk Cousins in the same boat. Last one on this, and we'll talk a little bit of Super Bowl. Do you think Washington might view Fabian Moreau as their next Kendall Fuller, another guy who fell because of a college injury, a pro day? Well, I guess Fuller's wasn't a pro day injury, but another third rounder who would have been drafted higher. And I feel like he's a potential wild card in this thing if he develops properly, maybe potentially opposite Josh Norman next year.
Yeah, I think because of his workout potential, a lot of people saw Fabian Moreau as like maybe a late first round pick before, what was it, a pectoral injury, I think, was what he suffered while he was working out. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, if you have that in tow and you know you're going to get back some of the guys you lost last year to other guys that you lost to injury, I guess that's probably a position of depth. But I don't know. I still feel like you can go back to when Scott McLuhan was there and look at the current regime and say, both units mishandled Cousins, and it caused them to make concessions down the road. So, yeah, if they feel like Moreau is going to be that guy, it hurts less for sure.
You know, it seemed like not everyone knew even as much about Kendall Fuller as we've learned in the past 48 hours, but we all know that the Chiefs have been hurting opposite Marcus Peters, so that's an exciting connection there, too, in addition, of course, to getting some draft compensation back after what they spent to get Pat Mahomes. Obviously, he's another side of the story. Can Mahomes step right in with Tyreek and Travis Kelce? We'll continue breaking this down. It's got a lot of layers and can go in a lot of different directions, but I know there's another game. I guess before I get there, even though, Eric, any other interesting kind of NFL stories that have jumped out at you? I feel like that's kind of been a little bit quiet, too, in terms of other big news outside of the Super Bowl popping up in Minnesota.
Yeah, I was told by somebody to sort of pump the brakes a little bit on Kirk Cousins to Denver as a sure thing. Like, you know, there are already some people, if you look at the odds, if you want to bet on those sorts of things, oh, Denver's the massive favorite and all that stuff. I've been told that's not necessarily I can't give the full story yet. I've got to do a little bit more work on the reasons why, but I feel good enough about what I was told to at least think that it won't be the slam dunk that everybody sort of seems it to be right now. So I don't think Jacksonville is the place either. I think Cleveland, given its cap situation, has to at least consider going all in there. Yeah, I mean, the bank will get open one way or the other, but I would not be surprised if there's a team that people maybe aren't quite talking up as much right now. Maybe the Vikings.
I took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, man. That could be the one that I didn't necessarily think coming into this week. I think they could be the team.
Oh, man, that would be a pretty interesting pairing. You throw him in the middle of Diggs and Thielen and Dalvin Cook coming back. We'll be following that for sure. All right, Eric, we got about 10 more minutes with you. I know you got to run off to an NFLPA presser. Go hear what DeMaurice Smith has to say. That should be really truthful and riveting.
Yeah.
Before we get there, let's talk a little bit of football. I feel like you maybe been going back and forth a little bit. What was your final well, I don't want to get to the prediction yet, but what's going to make this a four-quarter game, a compelling game that maybe can match up to what we saw conference title weekend, at least on the AFC side, and certainly in last year's Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think if the Patriots don't go up by like two scores early, you know, that we should have a pretty good game. I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine. You know, game scripts can get thrown in the trash right away. Obviously, one or two fluky plays early on. You know, last year we had, you know, a dominant performance early by the Falcons offense and then the pick six. And it was kind of like, whoa, this thing went sideways quickly, you know. And that said, I think if the Patriots don't get up big early, and their past Super Bowl history shows that they don't. I mean, they're scoreless in seven previous Super Bowl first quarters, which is just unbelievable. But, yeah, short of that, I mean, it really – it should be a good game for four quarters. You know, both teams can run the ball if they want. Eagles maybe a little more so than the Patriots. Both teams obviously have good short and intermediate passing games that they trust. Both teams have competitive and smart defenses. Maybe the Eagles are a little stronger on that side of the ball, but yeah, I mean, I with Brady, I don't think you're ever out of it. And I don't think Foles is the kind of guy who's going to put them in a terrible position early.
You know, it's kind of cliche, Eric, but I feel like the two games, not the two games, but the two sort of angles in this one that could potentially produce an upset, they've been talked about a lot, but I think it's that Eagles defensive front that has similarities to what the Giants did in a couple Super Bowls, just the ability to rotate and keep guys fresh and particularly try and bring pressure straight up the middle with four guys, because we know how Tom Brady reacts to other types of pressure and versus up the middle and what we've seen. And then the time of possession and Doug Peterson's persistence on the ground and keeping those guys fresh too, Eric, with Jay Ajayi, and you got LeGarrette Blount, Corey Clement, maybe a lot of people don't know about, but he's been a nice little player for them. And that looks like they could both be potential mismatches when you talk about it going up against this Patriots front seven that is not without its issues and an offensive line that's solid, but Tom Brady's taken his share of hits this season.
Yeah, and if they you know, if the Patriots don't give those guys help, either chipping with receivers, backs, tight ends, things like that, or if, you know, they don't sort of slide their protections to help him out or do different things to kind of slow down that rush, you're right. I mean, they're deep enough and potent enough to get you eventually. And I think I kind of used this analogy elsewhere earlier in the week, and who knows if I'm right about it, but I almost feel like Belichick's Julio Jones this year is going to be Fletcher Cox. Like, he's not going to let Cox beat them. Now, granted, Jones made three incredible catches, like otherworldly grabs. So he did what he did, but he didn't score a touchdown. So you're still going to see Fletcher Cox make plays. But I think Belichick is going to make sure, hey, if we get beat, let Vinnie Curry get a sack. Let Chris Long get a sack. Like, we can live with that as long as that interior pressure is not blowing up my A-gaps and Tom Brady is not flailing around back there. That's, you know, we have to be able to do something up front to slow him down. So that's the one thing that I think they'll safeguard against in the blocking game.
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy. It's just so easy to forget that that Julio catch the chain mover late in that game because, of course, Julian Edelman makes the ridiculous play on you know, a few minutes later between three Falcons defenders. We almost kind of overlooked that other catch. But so you know, if that is the plan, and Fletcher Cox is the Julio in this analogy, then you have to think that kind of the Taylor Gabriels and the Mohamed Sanus become the guys you just mentioned, maybe the Derek Barnetts and all these other guys. So we'll see how much those complementary pieces can end up doing.
And Bo Allen is a guy that they've talked up a ton this week, and they say people don't realize how good he's been for us. So I could see somebody like that having a 1.5 sack game or whatever out of the blue.
Okay, interesting name. Yeah, I mean, it's such an embarrassment of riches. I believe the deepest defensive front in the NFL. You don't even think about a guy like Bo Allen. What about on the Patriots side of things? I mean, I think we can safely assume Gronk it continues to trend in the right direction. I don't know if he's officially cleared protocol yet, but he was limited practice participant Wednesday. Do I have that right?
Yeah, we're taping this, you know, right before Gronk was about to speak. But, I mean, all signs point to that happening. And so, yeah, I can imagine that. Even if he is a little bit of a decoy in this game, he's going to play his role as a run blocker, as the guy drawing coverage, and he'll make his catches too. But there have been plenty of times where he's played that role, and then he'll catch three passes on one drive or something like that.
Hub had an interesting column earlier in the week about, it's quite obvious that the disparity between Bill Belichick chasing his eighth ring and Doug Peterson coaching in his first Super Bowl. And I don't want to sell Doug Peterson's staff short. Jim Schwartz, John DeFilippo, Frank Reich, they've done a remarkable job this season. But there's a reason that the Patriots are graduating both coordinators to the NFL. Brian Flores got a lot of looks, and Bill Belichick is the greatest ever. Do you expect that experience gap to show up on the field Sunday and potentially be a big factor in this game?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, people are talking about how good Dave Phipp, the Eagles special teams coach, is, and how bright he is, and how he's a future star. And like you said, Schwartz could have been in the same position that Patricia was, or something like that. You know, he's probably going to be a head coach at some point again in his career. So there's definitely, you know, Ken Flagel, the linebackers coach, former coordinator. So there's a lot of experience on that side, too. That said, nobody has what the Patriots have on their staff in terms of that. And they're all cast in Belichick's, you know, forged by his irons, you know. And so they all kind of share that same vision, too. They've been doing it so long. This is a new staff. They've been put together in the last couple of years. So I think there's a lot of talent. Maybe there are one or two things that come with playing on Super Bowl Sunday, with longer TV timeouts, 45-minute halftime, you know, that fourth quarter fatigue, game management decisions that are a little different. I could see those subtle factors maybe playing in.
I thought I heard you say at the top of this podcast that Bill Belichick was cracking jokes this week at Super Bowl Media Day or Media Night. Is that am I reading too much into that, or is that weird? A and B, have you been surprised by the lack or the, I don't know, a lot of talk about the ESPN report came out in December. There was rumblings that this could be the end of this Patriots legacy. Has that did it end up being an angle this week? And do you feel any differently than you did about it going into the week?
I heard people mention, hey, you know, Belichick's sort of laid back. He's having fun. He made a couple of dad jokes, you know, or he didn't frown when somebody made a dad joke and things like that, and sort of half played along with certain things. But yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a sign he's retiring. I know there's some people sort of floated that, and oh, this is his last game. He's going to walk off into the sunset, win or lose, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'll say this, the Kraft family absolutely adores Josh McDaniels. If they had any inkling, and Belichick would probably tell them, if he had any inkling that Belichick was leaving, Josh McDaniels would have been the next head coach of the Patriots.
Sure.
Now, maybe Belichick would have picked Patricia, whoever, I don't know, but I'm just saying, if the Krafts had their way, it would have been Josh. So I just don't think that's good, you know. His looseness probably has just come from a place of, boy, you know, this is just another Super Bowl, and I think he occasionally will enjoy it in the moment.
Yeah, and he can obviously join, well, it wouldn't even be rarefied air. He'd be alone in NFL history if he were to get his eighth combined between head coach and an assistant. It would be a remarkable feat. Eric, I got to let you go for the NFLPA meeting, but not without a prediction. Does Bill Belichick get his eighth ring? Does Brady get another? And does this dynasty have another chapter in its legacy?
It certainly could happen. I'm going to go the other way, though. I'm going to pick the Eagles. Something about this team, and it would be strange to sort of think of, oh, I'm picking Nick Foles over Tom Brady, but I don't necessarily see it that way. I don't know that it's a dominant New England defense. I do think this is an Eagles defense that can have some effect on this game. So, like you said, that rush and that run game, some of the short and intermediate passing, I think it's enough to overcome the Eagles' shortcomings. I think they win this game, you know, something like 31-27. So, I don't know. I just got a sort of a weird feeling about the Eagles.
All right, I'm right there with you on a close game. I just can't pick against the Patriots. I know that's.
Lame, I don't blame you.
Yeah,
I don't blame you.
I'm not ready to go there. I'm going to say Patriots win late by 6 points, and we both have a close game. So I think that's ultimately what we're both rooting for as well. Eric, I'm going to let you run. Thank you again for joining the PFW podcast. One more reminder: he's Eric. I'm Arthur. This podcast is available at iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Leave us a rating and a review, and make sure you hit the ProFootballWeekly.com site over the next several days because we got tons of Super Bowl content up, and after that we go wall-to-wall draft coverage. So thank you for being with us again today, and Eric, enjoy the rest of your trip. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.